Minister, you're welcome. I would like, we have translation, if you could use it. It is necessary to speak to the micro. It's a great pleasure for us to meet you in Portugal and to have this opportunity to change some ideas and some information. This is a very informal meeting. We would like you can start telling us your ideas about Europe, the future of Europe, and about, of course, the European Swedish policy. And after this, the members of Parliament can ask you the questions they consider adequate. Okay. Thank you, Ambassador, Minister.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President, and thank you for letting us come and visit you in your Parliament. For anyone who is involved in politics, it's always a special pleasure and a special privilege to come into the real center of politics in each country that you visit. And, of course, the Parliament is the center for everything that we do in the Swedish politics and what you do in Portuguese politics and all over the place. We have come a delegation here from the Prime Minister's office in Stockholm. Paula Carvalho-Lawson is State Secretary there for EU Affairs. And we work together together with our Prime Minister, of course, to try to advance Swedish interests in the European Union, but also Europe's interests in the world. And I'll say a little more about that later on. You know our ambassador, I'm sure. Carolina is from our Prime Minister's office section for EU coordination, and in particular responsibility for right now for the negotiation on the budget, which is a very crucial issue. And Magdalena?
Here.
Is there? She is Magdalena Emilias. She is also in my staff in the Prime Minister's office, working on organizing a lot of our activities. And Maria is from our embassy here. So thank you very much for letting us come. I was reminded, of course, when I got here, of my first visit to Portugal, which was in 1975, a very crucial year. I had just started in the government offices in Stockholm. I was press secretary to Olof Palme, who was then prime minister. He was a very close friend of Mario Soares. And I remember particularly one event that took place in the summer of 1975. This was a very delicate time, I remember. And the world's Europe's leaders had just been in Helsinki for the Helsinki conference that put on the Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe. And most of the social democratic leaders who were there took the flight over to Stockholm from Helsinki and met at the Haga Palace in a meeting of support of Portuguese democracy and Mario Soares. And that was a very moving moment because things were not that clear. And we were, of course, very pleased in the Social Democratic Party to see this going so well as it did. And you joined then the European Union after less than 10 years, I think, or 10 years or so, a bit before us, because we were still a bit hesitant. This was still, of course, the Cold War. We were having a division within Europe between East and West. We had large arsenals of nuclear arms placed very close to each other, ready to be fired off, ready to start the Third World War within minutes. And this was a time when security policy was very important for us as a neutral country. Then came the fall of the wall in Berlin in 1989 and started opened many more new possibilities for cooperation in Europe and in the world. And we could also look at Europe and at membership of the European Union. And we had a referendum in 1994, a rather slim majority in favor of membership, but it was a majority, so we entered. We were perhaps a little hesitant in the beginning. Some of us felt that we were perhaps more Swedes than Europeans. I can say now, after 25 years, we are as much Europeans as we are Swedes. We have a much fuller dedication to the European idea than you could ever seen before in my country. Our Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, made a very important declaration in our Parliament about a month ago on our commitment to the European Union, to the values, but also to the idea that there are things that we can only work and do together. And we want to be committed to participate fully in everything that is in our interest in this organization. And we are looking now at Portugal, because in 1 year's time, this country will have the presidency of the European Union. And we know that this year before the presidency is the most important one in forming the policies. So we have had consultations yesterday here with my colleague in the General Affairs Council, your State Secretary for European Affairs, but also with the Sherpa in the Prime Minister's office to discuss how we can help each other to move the European agenda forward. We have similar values in many respects with Portugal. There are some things where we differ. We come from very different positions on the budget, for example. We are much more restrictive in our view on this. While I know that your government is insisting that we should that the level of the current proposal is too low, and that there is a need to preserve more of the funds for cohesion. So this is something that we will have to argue in the negotiations that will come next year. But if you want me to say just a few more words about Swedish priorities in the European field, I will give you five items that are close to our heart and that we put as the main objects of our membership. And the first one is the most fundamental. This is our belief in democracy and the values that unite us in Europe. These are so well summarized in Article 2 of our treaty about freedom, democracy, tolerance, respect for the rule of law, respect for human rights, equality, tolerance, as I said. These are values that are at the basis for everything we do together in the European Union. But we have some difficulties, because there are some forces in this continent that have even entered government in some of our countries, our member states, that tend to move away from these values. And we see more of a decrease in the independence of the court system, and the decrease in academic freedom, and decrease in freedom of expression in some member states, which is a really problem for us, because if we are going to have trust, the trust between member states that is necessary for us to have a well-functioning single market and good relationship in all our respects, we also have to trust that the legal systems work and that the principles that our democratic systems are based upon, that they will also work out. And this is something that we have to take seriously. Our second item on the list is of priorities is a climate issue. And we talked a lot about that yesterday with our Portuguese colleagues. We have made some progress in Europe this year. I remember early on in 2019, we started a group of countries to call for a common commitment to carbon neutrality, climate neutrality in 2050. And there were half a dozen countries out of the 28 who signed up on that. And then as we moved into the summer, there were less and less resistance. And now we had a summit meeting last week in Brussels, which endorsed the idea, but one member state still said that it didn't know when it could implement it. So this is progress, and we need that progress, because the signals that we get from the scientists all over the world is that we are not heading for 1.5, not for 2 degrees, but for 3 degrees of increased temperature compared to pre-industrial levels. And that is a danger for our whole planet and our civilization. We have to deal with this, and Europe can take the lead and should take the lead. Our third issue of priorities for the European agenda deals with jobs and growth. As social democrats, we are always defending the rights of the workers, and we think that these jobs that are to be created, they must also be fair jobs. You cannot have a labor market that depends on social dumping. You cannot create jobs that are made available through lower wages or worsening of working conditions. And we have had some progress in the European system during the recent years, when we had this posting of workers directive that really establishes the principle that there should be equal pay for equal work in each member state. You shouldn't be able to send workers from another member state to Sweden or to Portugal with lower wages. The same wage system, the same wage agreements that we have in Sweden should apply to everyone, whether they come from another country or whether they were in our country from the beginning. So that's an important part. But we also have to be more innovative in Europe. We have a tough competition here from the United States and from China and the other global actors. We have to put more resources into research and development, and we have to defend our single market and promote it even further, maybe extend it to services to a larger extent, maybe look at the digital market to a larger extent. And I know that is something that your presidency here for the year after next is also focusing on. Fourth item on is a question that has been acute for several of us during the recent years, and that is migration. We need a system that really takes on a common responsibility for all European countries. I was in Greece a couple of weeks ago and visited one of the refugee camps they have there, and you can see the difficulties that government faces, but also, of course, these persons, these people who are in these camps, who come from far away, that they are confronted with. And I know your prime minister is in Greece also. Was it yesterday and today perhaps as well? And will have his own view on this, of course. We have failed so far to organize a common asylum system in Europe that works. But we must not give up on this. We have a Swedish commissioner in the new European Commission who has responsibility for both migration and home affairs, and we hope that we will be able to take a new initiative. And it's not just creating a common asylum system within Europe. It's also about protecting our borders, and it's also about making further efforts in the countries where these asylum seekers come from in the first place to make sure that we have less of violent conflict, that we have more of development so that people can stay in the countries where they now seem to be forced to escape from. Our final priority, number five, is security. And that's both internal and external security. We need to be more active around the globe in promoting peace and development from Europe. Europe is a fantastic union. We have almost 500 million people. It's the biggest market. It's the biggest donor of development assistance. But our political clout is so marginal compared to some of the other global actors that we have to do something to improve this. I have no really good recipe for that. I hope that the new Spanish High Representative will have some ideas. Maybe we can have more, try to, in some cases, look at qualified majority instead of the demand for unanimity on some of the aspects of foreign policy, but something must be done to enforce our role in foreign affairs. But also internal security is extremely important. This threat of terrorism that we have seen in so many of our countries must be dealt with through cooperation between our police forces, security forces, customs officials. We have weapons that are sent to our respective countries from other nations that we have to control better. We have to get rid of tax fraud and other criminal activities that make our lives uncertain. So these are the five basic priorities from the city side. It's a great adventure to be in European politics, as you know, as we know, and we really look forward to this coming Portuguese presidency to see how we can contribute together to develop Europe further. Thank you, Mr. President.
Minister, it's a great privilege for us to have the opportunity to hear you, a very experienced politician. We absolutely share the principles and the ideas you express now. But I will give the floor to the representatives of the parties. Yes, the different representatives of the party. We have the main Portuguese parties here in our committee. Of course, then the biggest party, Socialist Party. Please, Isabel, you can give the floor.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here this morning, and to you, to Paula, which is a friend since a long time ago. It's really nice to have you here. Also, Mr. Ambassador, all the delegation, on behalf of the Portuguese Socialist Party, I welcome you here in this committee and to this exchange of views. It's very important for us to know what our Swedish counterparts are thinking about this project, which is Europe. And especially with your position and in your situation, because you share a lot of views on the way that we should build Europe. And so it's for us, for the Portuguese Socialist Party, it's very important that we have very much committed Europeans, because we need it very much. And I mainly have three questions around the things you said. The first one is the one related with the internal cohesion of the European Union, because I guess that is fundamental for our objectives, either for jobs and growth and the capacity of building our Europe in this context of global powers that are challenging us. And we know that we have some lack of solidarity, not only in terms budget terms, but also in political terms. So that is, these divisions that we are facing in Europe are a problem. And as you said, we have some countries that are going away, going apart of those democratic values that we are facing, and it can be a threat to our project. And so in this sense, the first question that I have to you is in which way you think that we should go forward in order to overcome these problems. The second question that I'd like to ask you is related to this one, because we have this question of related with the budget and our capacity of having a political voice united in the world. And in fact, we are being challenged by huge powers, not only some traditional, but someone that have raised more strongly in the last years, like China and like United States also, which is now, we have tensions, not only in commercial terms, but we have tensions with the United States. We have Russia around us. We have other global problems. And so in this sense, what can we do to have a strong and position in the world? Because it's very important that we can also know how to deal with these powers that are challenging us, not only economically, but in terms of values. That is very, very much important, because I think that if European Union do not has that capacity of to affirm its values, I guess the world will be worse than what it is now. And the third question that I'd like to hear from you is related with something that is very important for us in Portugal. It concerns the relation with Africa. We have in our presidency foreseen a summit with Africa, which it will happen more sooner than what foreseen. And Africa, in fact, is a big challenge to Europe and, I guess, in general terms, because the demographic question in Africa is very, very important. And it has to do also with us. So for us, for Portugal, since ever, we had always had a position towards having a stronger and deeper relations with Africa. And I'd like also to hear from you about this question, which for us is really strategical, and I guess for Europe, it's also something that must be really taken into consideration. Thank you very much, and I hope you will have a very nice time here in Portugal. It's raining, like in Sweden most of the times, so you don't feel weird with here. And it's really a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. I think it is better to put all the questions and you answer in the hand, or do you prefer to answer one by one?
I think it's easier to answer one by one, so okay, that I remember all the questions.
Okay, then I ask to my colleagues, please make it,
short questions.
I will make short answers also.
Because we would like the minister
has the opportunity to make a short visit to the parliament, and we must finish at 10:30. Yeah. Okay.
No, on the question of how to overcome it's really, we have a serious problem on polarization on many fronts, not only the one that I mentioned on some of our basic values of respect for the rule of law. It's also on migration. It's clear that a few, not so few perhaps, well, at least it's a minority of countries do not accept the common responsibility for migration policy. And that is the dilemma that Ylva Johansson, our commissioner, is facing now, that she is going to do a new proposal. But we also have it when it comes to other fields. We have had a division on the climate. That has been now diminishing. And I think it's a power of persuasion. Again, we have to stand up for these values. There is no compromise on democracy, no compromise on the independence of the courts. And we have to find ways to convince those who don't understand that this is necessary, that they have to go back to that track. And one way that we are doing that is in the budget now, where there is a good proposal to link respect for the rule of law with the receipt of budget support from the European Union. A country that does not adhere to the principles or the rule of law should not have the same amount of money from the European Union's support funds that they otherwise would have got. And if we can establish that, I think that could be useful. I said also about your question on the stronger position in the world. We need to be more looking outward. We are spending so much time in the UN and in our own coordination meetings talking to each other. We should spend more time talking to the others and explaining our views and our position and our values and why it is necessary and important to listen to the European way of doing things and not be so much upheld by internal coordination. That would be my recipe. Relations with Africa. Well, Portugal can show us the lead there, I think. We have had a good cooperation also from northern Sweden with many African countries, not least in development cooperation. But I spent a number of years as a part-time assignment to be the special representative of the EU for the Manu River Union countries, Liberia and Guinea and Sierra Leone, and to see how they transformed themselves from really internal fights, domestic strife, and they killed each other by the thousands, to a shaky but still a democratic development in all these three countries. That is something that the European Union supported and could be proud of that we have advanced. And we should keep doing that, even if we are challenged from time to time. Thank you.
Paulo Muniz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Minister, and all the delegation for the opportunity. I will be as briefly as I can. And one thing that I thought you were supposed to mention is the Brexit issue. For us, it's something that in Europe, by the time being, we cannot be without talking of it. In Portugal, we used to say that we have an elephant on the living room and nobody seems to see it. So that's something that I would like to hear your opinion and your forecast, not only in terms of the economical impact and the contribution that UK has to Europe, but also the lack of the armed position and the army contribution that the UK always represents to Europe. We have now, in terms of defense, external defense, we probably will have a less strong position that on this new geopolitical global scenario will be some issue to Europe against China and US and Russia. Secondly, because I am from Azores, I always take the floor and the opportunity to reinforce the importance of the most outmost regions like Azores to have a special treatment, not only because they might be probably the most beautiful islands in the world, but I'm suspicious about that, but anyway. But because I think that in these small areas, in these small realities, if you do not give a sign of cohesion, of unity, that some part of Europe that lost their values, that nobody will be behind, even those who structurally has more difficulties to get to the standards that we have established. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me say first on the second point on the utmost theory, I understand that very well. And we also have a very scarcely populated part of our country that also fits into the same thinking mode, and we need to defend our interests here. I think we can do that together. On Brexit, many people feel that now that Boris Johnson has such a great majority, everything will be smooth. I fear the opposite. I fear we will have a very difficult year, 2020. Of course, Brexit will be done in the sense that they will leave on the 31st of January. That's for sure. There's still a vote to be taken. But I predict that vote will be taken. So that will happen. Then we will have a transition period. And during these 11 months, they will be almost like members. They will have to pay for what they are doing, and they will get everything except influence, because they will not be in the council, and they will not be in the commission, and they will not be in the court. The problem is what happens then. And we have just learned, I think yesterday or the day before, that Boris Johnson intends to enact a law that forbids him to prolong the transition period, even though we have made it possible. He could prolong it for 1 year or for 2 years. We think that would be an obvious need for that, because to negotiate a full agreement on not just trade, but perhaps also services, security, fishing rights, what have you, this is something that will take, probably should take, more time than 11 months. I know you have had Michel Barnier here also visiting Lisbon, and I think he has explained very clearly how necessary it is to devote energy and time to this. Boris Johnson doesn't want that. He wants to force the United Kingdom to terminate this transition period. And I have a suspicion that what he wants to see after the 1st of January 2021 is a United Kingdom that is less linked to the European Union than we would like to see. He would like to have more liberty to arrange his own playing field, his own rules for competition, his own ability to engage in trade relations with other countries, than we would like to see. And this is where we may have a conflict. And this can be very difficult, a more difficult process for us internally also within the Union than we have seen so far when we have been able to be united. So I'm afraid Brexit will be with us as much next year as it has been the last 2 years. Thank you.
Member of the Bloc de Esquerda.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you very much for your visit. It's very good to be here and to be able to talk about some of issues that concern us. I want to address a question. I would like to hear more about the way Sweden is related with migrants and refugees, people they are seeking the country for help, and how do you address the question about the hate speech and all the prejudice and racism that is affecting the way that Europe sees these migrants and people that are looking for asylum? And in the other way, how do you deal with the need of solidarity, Greece solidarity, that has a lot of refugees that need to be recollected in European countries? So how that Sweden is dealing with this question. And the other issue that I wanted to address is about climate change, the way that the country, it's the policies that the country is applying to get down the emission of carbon dioxide and to fight global warming and and climate change? This is my two questions. Thank you.
Well, on your question on migration policy, Sweden took a very heavy responsibility in 2015 when we had the crisis. I think we had 163,000 asylum seekers that came to Sweden in 1 year, most of them in a few months. This was, of course, an unproportionate part. It was by far the largest number by per capita in Europe. It was only Germany that had higher in absolute figures. And this is not sustainable. It really was so difficult so that some of the local authorities could not even get housing or lodging for these people who came. While a few other countries in Europe absolutely refused, they closed the borders and said that we don't want to be a part of this. This has to be changed. We have changed our policy. We have stronger rules now when it comes to migration, but we have also insisted very strongly that it has to be a common European responsibility. And we hope that we can go that way. On hate speech, we have also polarization in our society. We have a very extremist party to the right. They call themselves Sweden Democrats. They are not more than Swedish than I am. They are not Democrats either. But they are an extremist party. They have roots in the Nazi movement, and they are extremely anti-foreigners, to say it bluntly. They have, for reasons that I can go into more detail if you wish, been able to now have a large number of sympathizers. In the polls, I think they do around 23-24%. Well, they had about 17 in the election. And one of the reasons is that the other parties on the right in our political spectrum, they have opened up for cooperation with this party. And that means that they have made them more acceptable in the political discourse. And the conservatives and the Christian Democrats, they say they even want to cooperate with them to create a new government in the future. And that makes an acceptance that we would never, as Social Democrats, tolerate. So that there you have it. And this is a party that also really uses hate speech when it comes to talking about minorities and immigrants in my country. We have extremely liberal laws when it comes to freedom of expression. But of course, there are limits. And some of these expressions have been prosecuted. But the way to meet hate speech is, of course, to make clear that the values that this speech represents is absolutely unacceptable, and to take the debate on these values. That's, I think, the fundamental thing to do. On climate change, we are lucky in my country. We have some natural resources of energy. We have a lot of rivers that give us hydroelectric power. We don't have as much sun as you have in Portugal, but we have been able to expand the solar energy sector quite considerably because of the improvement in the technology that has been taking place. We have a lot of wind. We will have wind power parks in many parts of our country. It's a sparsely populated country, so it's not so difficult to have acceptance for that. We have some nuclear energy still, but that is not economically viable in the long run. So we will have a change. And we have already reached a point where all electricity that is now produced in Sweden comes from non-fossil sources. All of it. Of course, we still have a transportation sector that depends on a lot of fossil energy. But that also is changing with the electric cars. But to get the electric cars to be operated, you also need batteries that work out well. And I hear you have lithium mines here in Portugal. We could maybe use some of that. If you can open those mines, please, as soon as possible.
The problem is the environmental consequences to explore it.
Well, all the political groups use the floor. I would like to know if some other member would like to put the question. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for being here and to visit us. It's very important for us to keep these contacts with the other countries and share all our concerns about the European issues. I think we talk about the main problems that concerns the European Union. But I think all the question I would like to ask you, it's about the refugees and the effect on Schengen agreement, because Schengen represents freedom. And we see a lot of countries to build the walls in Europe. And we are, this process can destroy European Union. I think I would like to ask you what you think about it, because we have to put down the walls all along the world and start in European Union. And my colleague from the Socialist Party have already put the questions that I would like to ask. So I just say thank you for being here. It's very nice to have you, and I hope that very soon we can be together again discussing all these problems and share it, the values that you express here, and it is that they are always the Portuguese values in Europe. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much for those warm words. On Schengen, we have no basic difference. This is a fantastic part of the European Union, that we're going to have a freedom to move all over our continent and between our member states. The problem is that we don't have the right conditions for that working out as it was thought of from the beginning, because we don't have our external borders protected well enough. And as long as we don't have that, we cannot handle it. I also see a difficulty with, if you have countries that do not respect the obligation to share responsibility for receiving asylum seekers and to keep persons that they are they should have, you can doubt whether they really have a place in the Schengen system itself. So I think rights and obligations go together. The right to have access to the Schengen system should be coupled to the obligation also to be a part of the common European asylum system. If you don't have that, I think one could question that. Now, that's a debate for the future, and maybe it will come as a part of the debate on migration package. But in principle, of course, I agree with you totally.
Thanks, Minister.
I don't know. We can.
Okay, Minister. I think we have a very good exchange of views. We can conclude that we share with Sweden the principles of solidarity, of justice, and about the rule of law. Of course, we have another more pragmatic problems like MFF, and I know how the Swedish position is different of our own. But I hope in the near future we can have a good conclusion of the MFF negotiations, because if we want a strong Europe, you need have strong tools to do it. And one of them, of course, is budget. And in Portugal, we are very concerned about the position of some member states, as Sweden, because we think the Europe without solidarity is not the Europe we want. And if you can explain us a little bit what do you think about the end of the conclusions about MFF, I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for that very important and difficult question, yes. Because it's very hard to see how this process is going to end, because the polarization also in this field is very, very obvious. Let me say first a word about Sweden's position. We have certainly accepted the idea of solidarity. We understand that those of us who have a higher national income should pay more to the budget of the European Union. There's no doubt about that. We believe in also that there is a case to be made for cohesion policies within the European Union, and that regions who need more development should also be supported in their development, so that we have a ever closer union, as it is said in the treaty. But there is a limit to how far we can go in each budget. And I can tell you, if we calculate the result of the proposal that the Commission has put on the table, which you from the Portuguese side think is too restrictive, if you look at that and translate it what it means to Swedish taxpayers, it would mean an increase in 44%. 44% from this period to the next period. And I don't know how ambitious your parliament is on these matters, but our parliament is not at all willing to accept an increase in 44%. Actually, they wanted to enact a law the other week saying that the Swedish Prime Minister could not accept anything beyond what is calculated from the growth in our GNI. No expansion whatsoever. So you see the differences of perspective here. And we have to come out of this in a good way. I agree with you that we need to do more things in the European Union. And we think there are more modern things and more things that creates more European value in the fields of innovation and the climate and security and foreign affairs and so on. We are not sure that one should continue with as much funding of agriculture policy in Pillar 1, the one that goes direct support, just because we have a certain area, a piece of land, you should get support from the European Union. The development of agriculture is another thing, but this first pillar we are not so sure about. So we will have to discuss this. If I may ask you a question, as a committee of the European Union here in your parliament, it will be interesting to see what is your role in connection to the government, because in my country we have a pretty strict regime. Because every time that we go to ministerial meetings in Brussels, before we go, we have to go to the EU committee and get the mandate. And we are not allowed to voice any other positions than those that have been endorsed by the parliament. And I wonder, do you have a similar system that you give directives to your ministers before they go, or do you just get the information afterwards, or how does it work here?
In this aspect, the job of Minister of Agriculture is a little bit better in Portugal. I know very well, I remember, I have a very good Swedish friend, Margareta Winberg.
Yes,
she is ambassador still?
No, she's not. She's retired.
Oh, yes, she was a very, very good friend. And I know the troubles she has when she needs to take a decision in the Council of Ministers. But of course, the Parliament accompanied the activity of the Ministry, but the Ministries are a large margin to decide in Brussels, in spite of to discuss and, of course, to have the mandate of the Parliament. But I understand your perspective about MFF, but we need to conclude and balance the agreement and as soon as possible. I think is important for you, but if we can do it. Well, Minister, thanks. We would like to have the opportunity to make a short visit in our parliament. And it was a privilege for all of us to have this opportunity. And we hope the good mission for you as Minister and for your country in the European contest.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President. And thank you all for coming here and letting us have this chance to exchange views with you. Thank you very much for that hospitality.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. Obrigado.